Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, men and women, non-conformers and non-believers, gender X and gender equals, welcome to Eat the Storms, the poetry podcast. My name is Damien B. Donnelly and I'm delighted to welcome you here today, tomorrow, or whenever it is you're tuning in on your preferred podcast platform. And that may be Spotify, Apple, Anchor, Google, Breaker, Podbean, Player FM, Overcast, Pocket Cast, Castbox, Podcast Addicts, or even iTunes. Last week we had an incredible poetry party as we celebrated Pride and I had 13 poets join me, all part of the LGBTQ plus community, and a huge thank you to everyone who tuned in and to the artists who took part. Today, as always, we have another stunning, diverse episode for you with six poets waiting to share their words, taking us from here in Ireland to forests in Cambridge, a faltered heart in Scotland, a Brit in Belgium, and a three-time Pushcart Prize nominee in Los Angeles. So what more is there to do than sit back in your favourite armchair? Make sure there's a cup of tea, a jug of gin, or a slice of cake beside you. This is Eat the Storms, and I hope you enjoy the show. My first guest on the podcast today was one of 13 poets chosen in 2020 to be part of the Poetry Ireland Introduction series. She has had work published in Skylight 47, Abridged, and The Honest Ulsterman, and is currently working on her first collection. I had the joy of hearing her read this year at an actual live in-person event at the James Joyce Centre here in Dublin when she took part in A Night of the Norris. I am delighted to welcome to Eat the Storms for the first time, Sinead Nolan.
Hello Damien, and hello all of Damien's lovely listeners. My name is Sinead Nolan and I'm going to read three poems. The first poem is one that I wrote while I spent a year in northern Mexico, and it's called Golondrinas. Golondrinas. At sunset every day that winter, they would weave over the park, thousands of them, taking so long to pass, as far from home as I was. Golondrinas, my friend said when I described the fork in the tail and the sound wave, the murmur moving air over my face. They must be swallows. A rain of beings that knew where they were going and how and why and with who. And I had no word for murmuration. They couldn't be swallows. Not in winter. Over there, I unlearned all I knew, unspooled every thread, unnamed everything. I had just the air and these birds and the sky. The second poem I'll read is called Grapefruit, and it's a poem that I wrote during the first lockdown. Grapefruit. Two halves fall from the hole along the sharp edge of my knife, masquerading as an orange. This grapefruit now reveals itself, and I am excited by the thought of eating it in the afternoon. I savour the transgression. Four segments line my chopping board. Where my knife split the fruit, it bleeds, sticky over the wood. I pick a piece and bend it towards me. Flesh springs from skin, sinews eager to respond to the truth of my teeth. Juice screams into my red open mouth. I finish the grapefruit greedily, stack the four rinds beside the bin. I lick the chopping board clean. And I'll just read one more poem. This poem is called For When You Are Next Afraid. For when you are next afraid. When you next feel afraid, go lie down in your garden and let the night sky open to catch you. Or take your shoes and socks off in a cool forest and feel the mud between your toes. Don't think, but dance. Dance ripples into waves and watch yourself in the ocean. Come into yourself. Feel how your skin holds your body's waters as if you were a reservoir of rain. Hear your heartbeat. Remember you are a vibrant but brief rhythm and ending. And when you next fear the ending, imagine the warm blanket of earth and your return to moss. So those are my three short poems. Thank you very much, Damien, for inviting me on the podcast.
From Ireland now, we are heading over to England to settle down in Cambridgeshire for poetry stemming from the Forest of Dean. This poet has recently been published in magazines including Under the Radar, Ink, Sweat and Tears and the Fenland Read. He is the organiser of the Fen Speak Open Mic Night and has a pamphlet called Knots and Branches, published by Iwer Publishing in 2016, and his debut full collection Earthworks came out with Indigo Dreams in 2021. I am very pleased to welcome to Eat the Storms another first timer. This is Stuart Carswell.
My wedding present for you was an acorn. I told you to plant it in your garden so you could always be within reach of a forest. And so you planted it. And with time and rain, a forest grew around your house. Fawns graze at your door, ferns are window frames, and you are a neighbour to oak. Observe the seasons and the lessons they carry. Collect twigs and moss and learn to build a nest. Make it hard against the wind, but soft against the skin. Home should be a place to return to. Learn when it is time to let go and learn how to let go. Leaves do not fall far, so don't be scared to let in new light. Gather acorns, share them with your children and remember how small each beginning is. Fawns do not stay, but you will find a set of antlers each year outside your door. Oak is a marker for home and marks the starting point. Measure time in rings and anniversaries, and always be within reach of a forest. Thank you to Damien for that introduction. I'm Stuart Carswell, and I'm reading poems to you today from Earthworks, which is my debut full-length poetry collection and recently published by Indigo Dreams. This next poem begins with an epigraph from a newspaper cutting from the 1870s, which details the discovery of prehistoric animal bones in a cave system on the banks of the River Wye near Simmonjat in Herefordshire. Extinction on the tenant farmer's holding. The tenant of the property, a Scotch farmer, said he had for some time been manuring his fields with the bones of extinct animals which ages ago ranged over his holding. The Western Mail, 7th of March, 1874. The cave housed a treasure trove of bones, relics of creatures extinct for millennia, the protein roasted for nutrition and flavour. My tenant farmer had them crushed up and ground down to spread across his rented fields, fertilise the soil, raise crops from bone. In the half-light, in the blinking dark, I have a vision. We are all tenants to earth. And with my complicity, in the relentless way he administers and disregards the outcome of extinction, solely to prolong our own survival, I fear how my own bones may be exhumed and powdered and manured across fields if humanity itself collapses into extinction. So I grew up in the Forest of Dean in Gloucestershire, and I do draw on that location for ideas for my poems. And throughout the forest, there was a network of railway lines which served the coal mines there in the forest. And as the coal mines closed down, the railways closed with them. So sometimes when you're out in the forest, you can find old railway lines and bits of fences out in the woods. Sleepers. A curtain of ferns spreads at eye height to a child and parts from the push of a hand to expose the shrinking clearing and the treasure at its centre. An ancient sleeper, laying like a sunken casket and shrouded by a puzzle of oak leaves. The specimen ornamented with metalware, rusted plates and bolts, brooches carried by the dead to the next station of life. Close the curtains, change the scene. A figure stands at the end of the platform, his face masked by a flag. Steam spirals around him, a spire above rows of sleepers. There is one line drawn from childhood through junctions to connections, and the destination is close to definition. I feel the platform vibrate from something about to begin. The figure sounds his whistle. His flag drops and it is my face unmasked, and time to leave this dream, and I see it now. The trackbed has lost its track and I have lost track of time. I get up to check my phone, but there's no signal, and my daughter is asleep, habitually dreaming of a better life to travel in. And I see it now. The ancient sleeper is a relic, an inherited burden, second-hand history. I step outside, and the first engine of the day sets out light, and I see it now. I know what to do. So staying with the forest, this next poem features a Roman temple which is on the edge of the forest, and it overlooks a large meander in the River Severn. Silver Tern. A trace of a temple, an outline of a religion emerging through the scraped back layers of brushed earth. A square courtyard, stone-walled and fountain-fed, an alcove for a nymph. In the latest trench, dark soil gives way to buried metal glinting at the edge of the forest. A silver torque, a thousand years untouched, an almost loop like a thumb and a finger of a god holding on around your wrist. And here it is. The twisting silver River Severn flat on the dark vale plain below the hilltop temple. That same torque, magnified across open ground, broad when the current surging strong, or a delicate line at low tide. And if I wear this meander around my home, I know my home is safe and guarded on the land under the eye of a spirit, shielded by the arc of water at turns gold and silver, at turns of earth and tide. The book is called Earthworks, and throughout it there's a series of poems that all share the same Earthworks title, and each one focuses on a different historical site within Britain. And this next one is about Offersdyke. Earthworks. Requisition soil. Scoop it from a ditch, raise it and turn the earth against your enemies. A narrow rampart to mark the frontier of tolerance. Divide land by language. Make a border out of nothing. Forget the origin, forget the cause, and let borders be overrun by bluebells. Let ramparts degrade. Let the yew tree entrench its thousand-year-old ambition beneath the needless ditch and dike. Let a man walk the earth and know that this is the last earth. And I'm going to finish my set and leave you with this short little poem. This is A Map of Stars. Light crosses light years to reach us, and the stars appear small and dim from here. As time expands, the names of school friends recede when the divide widens from the years we remember them over. So when I look back, I think of my friends as constellations and see patterns in those distant lights, connecting together the faint memories from youth to create a set of stories to navigate by. Thanks for listening.
From a British forest, we are now returning again to Ireland for a poet who was born here in Dublin and raised in County Mayo, where she now lives. This writer has been published in places like the Irish Times, Poetry Ireland Review, Banshee and The North. Her pamphlet Sexy Fruit, published by Broken Sleep Books, was a Poetry Book Society Spring 2019 selection, and she was the editor of Empty House, Poetry and Prose on Climate Crisis, published by Dira Press in 2021. Coming next year from Picador will be her creative non-fiction debut book called Milk. I am delighted to have with us today on Eat the Storms, Alice Kinsella.
Pilgrimage. Howarth. The first visit hit with the wallop of words. I was in some kind of heart's home. Now, despite synchrony, stars won't align. I buy a brochure from the blue corner shop pushing Bronte merch, English pubs, and the ascent. That climb to Emily's quarry of emotional excess, where she could carve so delicately her indelible structure. Now bless me, I'm having what you might call a crisis of faith, but what prayers exist for the faithless? I find a signed first edition of Station Island, £5 not repriced since Heaney's death. It must be a sign, laughs the bookseller, with phantasmal Yorkshire wit. I think maybe an omen for this Irish girl neglecting heritage before drowning in it. Two. Bronte Waterfall with Grouse. Off the track towards the birth of water bubbling over from the earth, heather and ferns hold out their hands, pull me to this hideaway where blocks of sandstone balance the steps from a faraway eden. The water filters rust like glitter. I am bleeding again. I can feel the cleaving, the rush in my groin. In the water, birch leaves and shale gleam like fountain coins. The water berates as it lulls, keeps coming, dashing its weight on the rocks that wait an eternity for destruction. It's getting late, I've lost sight of the peak, the house's silhouette and my goal. I wash my hands and face in the water, leave my shoes on. It's cold for September and the moor is not kind, but the water is soothing, reminds me rest, then go. It's the red that I spot first, like a stain on a dress, the crown he wears even in death, feathers bent like broken bones, wet as new kittens, claws closed on air, bead eye forced to stare, beak open mid-pause. I want to pet the oil slick of his neck, close his eye, beg his pardon for interrupting his decay with my search for some kind of epiphany that I can't find reading poems. I tell him I'm after what I've lost at home, some kind of jumpstart, a shock to the heart I hoped I'd find here on the moor, which must hold a power, some answer to the mystery. The ageless water keeps crashing to dissolve him. I can see how unforgiving nature can be, but there's a blood-deep pull, and for the briefest of seconds do I glimpse the sublime. The flow shifts, the light dips, the clouds threaten to break. I continue to climb. Three.
3. Ascent. This peace is outrageous. Something must fill it. Chuckles of grouse, the odd hysterical pheasant. Somewhere impossibly far, stones fall, jolting the air. Rushes bend and quiver, waves roll over them. Wind, my breath, my heartbeat. I read Sylvia Plath's Wuthering Heights on my phone. No, she climbed this path too. What am I trying to reach? There's a suggestion of garden, lawn shorn by sheep teeth. Stones pop their heads from the grass to say wall. Two sycamore trees, black spotted leaves, crumpled like bat wings, fret on branch ends, the crunch of the first falls this year. Against the roots of one tree, a yellow rose wrapped in plastic that may outlast the standing of these stones. This is where people bring their grief. Four. Dawn chorus for the dead. They rest until the day breaks and the shadows flee away. The rooks wake before day breaks and deliver me their calls through the canopy cloaking Haworth Cemetery. Parsonage windows dark could be sleeping. Church locked overnight could be sleeping. Slip of cobbles underfoot, clip, clop, clip, clop. Victorian light, black mist, street lamps like fires. Cat-like, I slip through shadows, tip-tap, slap-slap, my footfalls close distance. Chaos peaceful in the absence of all earthbound heartbeats, other than my own so tightly held beneath my tongue. The bells ring, welcoming 7 Sunday morning, bing-bong-bong-bing. All houses snooze still, rooks scream their panic, crescendo, crescendo, until the shadows break. And the day flees away, they rest. 5. The Haunting of Sylvia Plath. I have no faith, but the world keeps handing me miracles. Misty day halfway to heavens, so close this whole time. Hepton Stall sleeps like a ghost town. No cars crushing cobbles, no chit-chat on the street. It feels like a film set or a dream. No signs, no plaque, no Sylvia mugs in the shops. Her tragedy too new, a modern myth. Give it 100 years, persevere. The churchyard is committed to wildness. Medieval bones of prayer withstand the briars that rise up like waves to engulf them. At the gate, yellow poppies big as fists welcome me. Bees bob in and out. The sun, high and bright, holds no heat, white as starlight. I have no map. Instinct brings me to her. Still as the photographs, I don't have to queue for an audience. It baffles me. I fall to my knees. Her earth overgrown with foxgloves, weeds, crumpled bouquets, pins, lipstick, stones. This impossible stillness. This quiet. I have no prayer. What use is poetry here? I garden, pull up the weeds that are choking the flowers, remove tinfoil from rotten bouquets. Out of sight, a bell calls children from classrooms. Their play sounds the same in every country, every time. I leave a pebble stolen from Top Withens at her head. The dead can't speak unless we listen. A crystal vase holds rain and dead heather. A bee is skating on the algae, a drunk dancer. Dipping down, she can't keep her face above water. I scoop her out with one finger. She doesn't sting.
Now, thanks to Alice, we are halfway through today's episode, and just before I introduce the next guest, I'm going to read one poem of mine. This is a poem that I am honoured to say appeared in the York Literary Review 2022, which just had its launch the other night. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to get to the launch in England, so I'm going to read my poem here and say a huge shout out to Wendy Allen and Daniel Hines, who also appeared in this review and who have also been guests on the Poetry Podcast. Also, a huge thank you to the editorial team. Congratulations. This is my poem called The Wave. Sometimes we fall down in order to slip out. Slope leans in to shore. Wild horse runs out to sea. We are more than just the wave that doesn't always know its weight, and less than the rock split open, bleeding infinite slivers of rust-colored ore from core out to coast. Even this land has scars the water cannot wash away. There are layers scattered along this beach that only I can see, that only I have shed. Sometimes, in strange places, it is easier to see, safer to be seen. Where we have yet to know the names of streets or share the spotlight of our sins. Sometimes fucking is much more honest than making love. Slope leans in to shore. Wild horse runs out to sea and I watch, rust colored and bleeding, wondering, how far out is the wave that will wipe it all away? For my next guest today on the Poetry Podcast, we are going stateside to Los Angeles, to be specific, for a writer who's had over 25 collections of poetry published, including Tokyo Van Nuys Express, Hunka Hunka Howdy, and God Wrestler, a poem for every Torah position. He has been the host of the weekly Cobalt Cafe for almost 21 years, which moved to Zoom in early 2020, the recipient of the 2017 Ted Slate Award, the 2014 Beyond Baroque Literary Arts Center Distinguished Service Award, and a 3-time Pushcart Prize nominee and Best of the Net nominee. This is Rick Lupert.
Hello, this is Rick Lupert speaking to you from Southern California. I want to thank Damien for asking me to be a part of the Eat the Storms podcast. This first poem was written in Dublin, Ireland, and it's called Pole Position. It's from my book, Romancing the Blarney Stone. There's a pole in the middle of Dublin. I'd like to think of it as a pole, but Wikipedia says it's a spire. I don't know what the pole is for. I've asked Addie multiple times, and she doesn't know. We've been taking a lot of pictures of the pole from a distance, the pole up close, us with the pole in the background. There are a lot of those. We're getting to the point where, after another picture with the pole, she'll say, "Are we done with the pole yet?" How can one ever be done with the pole? It's the largest pole I've ever seen. It's really an impressive pole. There's no information near the pole about what the pole is, or who it's for, or who put it up. It's just a large pole on O'Connell Street. It's too thin to be a building, but it's taller than most buildings. What is this poll for? I could read the rest of the Wikipedia article, but I didn't come all the way to Dublin just to search the internet for Irish polls. Poll. This next poem is called How Many Times, and I wrote it shortly after the Russians invaded Ukraine, and I realized that Ukraine is essentially the part of the world that Jewish people refer to as the old country, where many of our ancestors came from after escaping a very similar situation. How many times? I don't remember a time when war wasn't on the tips of everyone's tongues. Every page of the history books is littered with it. Even our ancient text tells us who to go to war with. In the recent memory of our grandparents, there was the war to end all wars, and soon after that came the next one. They've made movies and TV shows about the intermediary wars. The peace and love of the 60s went hand in hand with Vietnam. And then there's the modern wars that have gone on so long we forgot they were happening. What a surprise when they ended and people were mad for some reason. This intrusion into Ukraine may be my 13-year-old's first war, or at least the first one he gets to experience from the beginning. I remember when my people left Russia. It seems the Tsar is still at it. He wears a modern suit now. He tells cameras and phones lies about what isn't really his. He sits in an office far from where the cannonballs fly. Not too long ago, I learned in the news that the murder hornets are coming. Naturally, I was alarmed when this story came on, but I wrote a poem about it. It's called How to Deal with a Murder Hornet. Remember, it's not personal. As soon as you can, offer to double what they're paying it. Make sure they don't have the wrong guy. Disguise yourself as a praying mantis. Religion makes murder hornets uncomfortable. Ask if its mother knows it's doing this. Why won't anybody think of the children? Tell it you'll help hide the other bodies. Delve into its past. Did it start out as a robber hornet? Consider the possibility you had this coming. Ask if it can make it quick. Run, damn you. Run. I'd like to read a poem from my book, God Wrestler. This is a collection of poems written once a week following the Torah portion text that Jewish people are supposed to read when it comes around. This is towards the end of the Torah cycle, and the parsha and poem name is Ki Tetze. It's from my book, God Wrestler. If you are at war and find your captives are beautiful, the laws of our people, 74 of which are listed this week, will tell you this could lead to a bona fide engagement. If you are at war and you find your captives are beautiful, how does that make you feel about having taken them captive? If you were at war and find your captives are beautiful, who has captured whom? If you were at war and find your captives are beautiful, do you forget what it is the war was about? Do you forget the meaning of the word war? Do you get in the cage with your captives and lose yourself in their beauty? If you were at war and find your captives are beautiful, you may take them home. That is allowed according to the words we read this week and every time this week comes along in the years past and the ones which will pass. You may find after a time your beautiful captives in your home may not find you the way you find them, and after a time you will have to let them go to wherever it is they wish to go. That is the law. That is the sacred word on the beautiful who you've captured. Did you see they were beautiful before or after you captured them? Let them go. They will not sing in your cage, these birds of war, these human birds, these spoils of war who will not spoil, these captives. You know what to do. And finally, I have a forthcoming collection of poems that I wrote in Hawaii last summer. The collection is going to be called I Am Not Writing a Book of Poems in Hawaii. It'll be out soon, I hope. This is a poem from that collection. It's called Goodnight Waikiki. It is 10:30 in the evening in Hawaii, and I'm as tired as a schoolgirl. I may be mixing metaphors, but I'm not sure what I was going for, and this place seems to be a mix of Los Angeles and Polynesia, of America and Japan, of ocean and pool. The clock on my writing machine has no intention of changing, and it reminds me of when I came from. It is 10:30 in the evening in Hawaii, in Honolulu, in Waikiki, in this village, and I'm going to sleep until, well, I'll let you know in the morning. Thank you so much for having me.
From Los Angeles, we are now coming back to Europe and settling down in Brussels in Belgium for a writer who works at the European Parliament. He is a poet, writer and reviewer and has had work featured in many anthologies and journals including Poetry Review and Poetry Wales. He was the winner of the 2019 New Poets Prize and is the long distance poet in residence at the fantastic Cheltenham Poetry Festival. He has two collections of poetry published by Indigo Dreams Press, including What I Heard on the Last Cassette Player in the World, and his third collection, The Kindness of Eels, was published in 2020 with Poetry Business. Joining us today for the first time in Eat the Storms, this is Ben Ray.
Hello, my name is Ben. I'm a poet, writer and reviewer from the United Kingdom, and I now live in Brussels in Belgium, where I work as a writer for the European Parliament. In my poems, I explore voices and anecdotes and stories from people from across Europe. And I really love the way the poetry can interpret these and give new light to these spaces. I've also started writing poetry about the EU, which is quite the challenge, quite fun. And I'm really looking forward to sharing these poems with you today. This poem is from the Poems for the Road anthology with Arachne Press, poems about the A470, which runs from the north to the south of Wales. It's called Unzipping Wales by the A470. Grip Wales firmly by the North Shore Parade at Llandudno and pull downwards. The road should split cleanly along the dotted middle lines. Watch the landscape peel away smoothly as you go, how the power station at Blaenau Ffestiniog fizzles out like a firefly as it slips into the water at Cardigan Bay, and Cadair Idris deflates into the rumpled cloth of Snowdonia, the River Wye unravelling as you pass through Rhyadr. You should feel some resistance when you reach the valleys, unknitting communities and pulling apart coalfields. Look how the Breckens curl back like paper when released, England bound. Try not to spill the red of Castle Coch as you pass. It'll stain the tarmac and stay with you to the flyover at Gibraltar, where the weight of the now opened country will propel you through Cardiff, upending the Millennium Centre into the bay. You should now be holding the unzipped country in your hands. Put it on. It should be a perfect fit. This next one's about a friend's mother who left her home country when she was very young, and so her native language has been frozen in that moment. It's called Your Mother Speaks in Her Ukrainian. Each time she phones them, she speaks a torn, bastardized version of it. A calcified, roots-ripped-up version of it. A black-and-white grandparents' version of it. Until it's no longer what you could recognize as a breathing, living thing. It is now unmistakably her Ukrainian. Reformed in abstract each time she calls a country that vanished 60 years ago. When she speaks it, it is a gift with no recipient. In her mouth, it is a shadow, a shallow imprint of where a language used to be. I often wonder, if I examine her tongue closely, whether I'd see written in clumsy, childish script her Ukrainian word for exile. This poem's quite self-explanatory. It's called Three Encounters with Beekeepers. Encounter number one. Dimitar's father is alive on the first line of this poem, but by the second line, he is dead. His name was Petar. Now he is past tense. In Bulgarian, he was Pietr. But bees don't mourn. They just buzz. He was first to leave. Next to go will be the hives, I expect. Encounter number two. My friends keep their hives at the bottom of the garden. The distance between them is mown with punishing exactness. Hedges are dismembered, flower beds sprayed. For their sake, they are nameless. In English, they are paradoxes. Encounter number three. On the outskirts, hot from April sun, we stop for lunch. Two city drones with city cash. In Broughton syntax, we try to smash the idols. The man in front of us pulls out his phone and shows us a photo of two queens locked in a death struggle, proudly tells us of the fray. In French, he is apiculteur. To us, he is a half-god with strange powers red as blood. This poem's called Beware Metaphors, and it's from a line by the writer Jo Moran, who writes that metaphors don't so much compare something to something else as alter what both those things mean. Beware that metaphors can pull both ways, that calling a man a wolf does indeed render him more like a wolf, his habits, his cruelty, his abrupt snarls at the children, the teeth that bear themselves when you roll over to face him in the morning. Beware that words obey Newtonian physics. They move with equal and opposite reactions. That calling a man a wolf does indeed render him more like a wolf. But one day, you may wake up with him next to you and look out to see tracks leading from the forest. And you may both wonder what waits for you outside the kitchen door. Whilst working in Brussels, I've noticed this strange phenomenon around the buildings which contain the European Union institutions of very small, very prim and pristine, and what look like quite controlled gardens and green spaces and flower beds, etc. And they always seem to me to be trying to escape and get out somewhere, but held in for show. So this poem is about that. It's a villanelle, and it's called The Gardens of the EU. The gardens of the EU are always surgical and clean. Hedges march in conformity. The flower beds are maintained. The grass is razor cut, an obnoxious, showy green. They know the lawn's secret purpose as cinema screen, a stage that always flatters, unobtrusive, restrained. The gardens of the EU are always surgical and clean. Children of dignitaries sometimes allowed to be seen, wandering paths during meetings, if well trained. The grass is razor cut, an obnoxious, showy green. Not trophy wife nor office, but something in between, a backdrop where impressionables are entertained. The gardens of the EU are always surgical and clean. Noises are banned in this tyranny of the serene. No growth flourishes here. It is merely sustained. The grass is razor cut, an obnoxious, showy green. empty afternoons, dreams of what could have been, but isn't. The roses seem trapped, the trellis chained. The gardens of the EU are always surgical and clean. The grass is razor cut, an obnoxious, showy green.
Our final guest today is a welcomed returning guest to Eat the Storms, a writer who grew up on Scotland's west coast and has built her life around words. She was Visual Verse's lead writer for June and has recently been published by Stanza Cannon, Black Bough Poetry and Nine Pens. Last month, she launched her stunning debut collection, How the Heart Can Falter, published by the Museum of Loss and Renewal Publishing. It was an unforgettable night of friction, fear, family and apparent failings with the body's most precious organ with far too many holes. But as I said in a tweet afterwards, a heart with holes so it can open up easily for all of us. Here tonight to share poems from that stunning debut collection, this is Giovanna McKenna.
Thank you, Damien, for inviting me back to the beautiful space that is Eat the Storms. And hello to everyone listening. Today, I'd like to lead you through a selection of poems from my new book, How the Heart Can Falter, from the Museum of Loss and Renewal Publishing. This collection is about family, grief, acceptance. The book's cover artwork by Emily Fong includes a watercolour image of an anatomical heart. Mine, actually. I was born with a defect, and so, to me, hearts are never Valentine's Day or chocolate boxes. They are messy and difficult and fragile, like familial love. I believe we all have our stories to tell. They are the mirrors of our lives. And today I hold up mine in the hope that you may also see yourselves. My first poem is The Start of Losing. I see your shape through the curves of my fingerprints on the glass. You are bending into the seat of a pale car. Half crouched, you turn and wave to me, to the house, to all you know you're leaving. You have a smile, wide and white and shining out from beneath your cloak of waste black hair. I have a knot, a stone, lodged in my chest, weighing me here, sinking my small knees into these torn foam seats. I watch the safety of you leaving through the window dull roar of the car's engine. I turn away from air that is shaped by your absence, away from the light to look into a darkness cut by sun and sea, dust motes sparkling where I can no longer find you. The next poem is about the first time I visited my mum after her death. It's an experience so many of us have had, that chance of a final encounter and what it may leave us with. This is Viewing Room. The door is closed between us. You lie beyond it, cool, empty. I pause, hand to handle, tremble at the thought of what I'll find on the other side. Perhaps the tight, waxen echo of my father's corpse, grey and yellow, and kilted in a box. I have to look for all the possible horror I will never unsee. I have to look. I push the thick door open. You are unmarked, a truly peaceful sleeper. No chemicals have filled your skin to falseness. You are at rest, eyes shut, mid-thought. Here is the frozen image of my mother's life. So sharp I search your chest for movement. You are unblemished. A crueler form than that of wax and funeral paste, you look too alive for me to grieve you. Parents are complicated beings, and their deaths can bring the clarity and understanding that we often wish we'd had in their lifetimes. This is A Box Called Home. My father was made of old pages, books with hard covers and insides that smelled of dust, begged to be read. His bones were covered in a patina of silence. Thickly shaped layers of Highland Reserve jostled with the vinegar breath of a whiskied laugh. My father was born in a box called home, a place his life searched to leave, to travel far from, to find culture in a marriage always looked down on from the place he came back to die in. My father roamed wide with his eyes, searched out those whose lives were built on continents adrift from his small spot of freedoms. My father was made of a mind that failed to take his body with it. He faltered at the exit, found he had crumbled back into the small space he came from. A perfect fit. No gifts to show for his journey. I am half Italian, and this next poem is about my nonno, my grandfather, and the papers he had to carry while living in Scotland, and his experience as an immigrant, one which is still shamefully relevant today. This is An Alien's Passport. They stamped your book with alien. The word spits from the softened pages. How hard was it to come here? Always asking permission, climbing tenement stairs instead of mountains, squeezing your life into a city street that held more people than all the villages you could walk to in a day. You left breadcrumbs behind you. I bend and stoop for the taste of them, crunch their crumbling bitterness between my clenched teeth. With each of your slow steps forward, from famine on hot hills to ice cream churned on the Garn Gad, they stamped your papers, erased your name with red pen for one that sat more softly on their tongues. My final poem today is a recognition of the impact of childhood and of the support to be found in nature. This is Archipelago. Each breath inhaled since birth roots fragments of first places in our bones. Each open shut of vision builds our marrow with the landscapes rich around us, sucking in the texture of rocks, barks, rivers, salt-foamed bays and skies dripping in constellations. And then, full-grown, wherever we choose to leave to, we are weighted, made, created by the places of our childish years. Thank you, everyone, for giving my word space in your day. I hope you found images here to connect with. Links to the book, How the Heart Can Falter, are on my website, giovannamckenna.com. And huge thanks, Damien. It's a wonderful thing to be part of the Eat the Storms poetry community.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, men and women, nonconformers and non-believers, gender X and gender equals, we've reached the end of another episode of Eat the Storms, the poetry podcast. My name is Damien B. Donnelly and I was your host and producer today, and I'd like to say a huge thank you to all of you for joining in. Whether that has been on Spotify, Apple, Anchor, Google, Breaker, Podbean, Overcast, Pocketcast, Castbox, Podcast Addicts or iTunes. And of course, an exceptional thank you to my six fantastic guests on the show today who have been Sinead Nolan, Stuart Carswell, Alice Kinsella, Rick Lupert, Ben Ray and Giovanna McKenna. As always, for details on all of my guests, please head on over to www.eatthestorms.com. Click on the podcast section and there you will find a blog post for every episode. This was episode 8, season 5. And in that blog post, you will find bios, photos and social media handles for all of my guests so you can find, follow and support them. Now, over at Eat the Storms, you will also find details on how to join the podcast if you're a poet and would like to come and share your poetry on the show. We are a platform that is open to everybody at all stages of their careers, so check out the details there. And also, while you're on the website, you will also find details for The Storms, our new printed journal of poetry, prose and visual art, which has just sent out emails of acceptances and unfortunate rejections for our inaugural issue, which will be launched in August this year. I am the editor-in-chief and I was overjoyed to be joined for the first inaugural issue by Gaynor Kane as my tiara-wearing sub-editor sidekick. We had a huge amount of submissions and it was in a hugely difficult job trying to cut it down into a book that was just over 100 pages. But we've managed to do it. But fear not, if you did not succeed in the first issue, there will be another issue opening again for submissions at the end of the summer. So keep checking back at the website for more details. Now, before we go today, I'd just like to give a shout out to the Full House Monthly Open Mic, who are having their monthly Zoom reading this Monday. That's the 4th of July, and I am delighted to be one of their guests, along with my dear friend Anique Yerram and the fantastic and recent podcast guest Julian Matthews. Huge thank you to JP Seabright, who was with us on our Pride episode, and her sidekick Leah Butler for the invitation. Now, that's it from me for today. So thank you so much for joining us. Thank you to my guests once again. And until next week, be safe, be well. And if the sun comes out, make sure you have some sun cream. And until next Saturday, stay bloody poetic.